Hey there, real quick question for you. Ready? Okay, let's go. Is your marriage necessary? Say what, Jen? Yep, that's the question. Is your marriage necessary? I must admit, I've never thought about my own marriage in this context. That is, until today's episode with Joe Marshall. During our conversation, Bill asked Joe about cultural perceptions of marriage. Is marriage important, or is it merely an unnecessary label? Y'all, that got me thinking. Is my marriage necessary? If so, in what ways? I now have 7.5 years of experience to answer that question. Sometimes it's helpful to ask other related questions to answer the one at hand. Things like, where would I be now if I weren't remarried? What kind of work would I be doing? Would I have more or less children? Would I be living in the same area? What would my friend group look like? What church would I be attending? Would my walk with the Lord be stronger or weaker? Early on in our marriage, we struggled with one thing. If you're in a blended family, I'm pretty sure you can guess the area that challenged us most. Yep, that's right, blending those kiddos. Back then, we didn't agree on many things related to parenting the kids. And we certainly didn't have boundaries in place to deal with high conflict exes. But we had this amazing love for each other. You know when you know, but you can't explain it to others in a way that makes sense? Yeah, it was like that. We knew, although we couldn't necessarily articulate it in a way that made sense to some family and friends who didn't think it was necessary, or they were concerned that we had gotten it wrong. But we knew God had called us to marriage. I can confidently share that yes, my marriage is absolutely necessary. Bill makes me stronger, smarter. He challenges me, yet he'll let me off the hook too. He comforts me. He laughs at my jokes. He teaches me. And he runs to the store for me, God bless him. And as we remind each other from time to time, our life is better together. I pray that your marriage is absolutely necessary. Even if you're in a tough season right now, I encourage you to reflect on the very necessary calling God has given you as a couple. A call to blend beautifully together, to raise your children together, and to create a legacy for your blended family. Welcome to episode number 66 of Step Family Mission Possible. Meet Joe Marshall, originally from Brockton, Massachusetts. Joe studied theology at Baptist Theological School of New England, and now, as a part of his work at Baptist International Missions, he pastors at New Beginnings Baptist Church, down under in Brisbane, Australia, where he, his wife Melissa, and their family make their home. In today's episode, we had the opportunity to learn more about Joe's passion, how he got from the U.S. to Australia, and God's call to the mission field. Not unlike many of you, when Joe received direction from God, he wasn't so sure God had picked the right guy. Fortunately, there's a lovely woman involved in Joe's story who was key to God's calling. In today's episode, Joe shares examples of cultural differences between what he grew up experiencing and the cultural norms he's been living in for the past 2 decades in Australia. Some of those cultural shifts include language barriers, societal norms, and everyday church life activities. Hey, if you're in a blended family, you can definitely relate to likely cultural shifts because, as you know, oftentimes it can feel like you're living in another country as your new family blends. When we asked Joe about some of the challenges related to church and ministry during the height of COVID, Joe shared 3 key things that not only kept their church family connected, they grew exponentially. Those same 3 keys, communication, accountability, and unity are exactly what you need in your blend to thrive. All right, friends, let's get started. And P.S., now's a great time to share this episode with a friend. Hey there, you're listening to Step Family Mission Possible, the podcast for step families with a focus on step family couples building their legacy together. We know that blending families is hard, and your hosts, me, Jen Rogers, along with my husband, Bill, are determined to make it easier.
It's time to turn stepfamily chaos into stepfamily mission possible together, so you can stop feeling that pit in your stomach on transition day and start celebrating all the reasons why you are exactly in the right place right now.
You ready?
Yeah.
All right, let's hit it.
Hi, welcome Joe Marshall to the Step Family Mission Possible podcast today.
Welcome. We're really excited to have you share your genius on the show today.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So I understand this is your inaugural podcast debut. Is that correct?
Yes. This type of thing. Yes, it is. It's good to be here.
Welcome.
Joe, you are actually an American serving in Australia. Tell us how that came to be.
Growing up, I always had felt like a calling or a desire to be involved in missions. I've always wanted to go somewhere where there wasn't a lot of different missionaries or churches or things of like faith. The Lord then, my first week in university, put me in contact with a young lady. She just came back from a mission trip in Australia, and she felt like the Lord wanted her in Australia. And I felt like I was interested in this young lady, so I needed to be able to hold an intelligent conversation. So I began to research Australia and began to correspond with missionaries in Australia and pastors in Australia. And through all that correspondence and really trying to hold the conversation with her, how the Lord made me aware of the need here. And then we ended up getting married and coming here. So turned out good for everyone.
Boy meets girl. I love it.
Those girls, they can do trouble sometimes. They can really stretch you.
They ended up going halfway around the world.
Yeah, really. You got to chase them, right? Chase them somewhere. Joe, you are now a pastor of a church there in Australia. What does being a missionary look like in Australia?
It looks like many things. You wear many hats, do many different things, counseling, designing, preaching a few messages here and there, discipleship, training, all sorts of things.
So with that in mind, let me ask you this about the church in Australia. Is it anything like the church here in the United States?
It has some similarities, but we do a lot of things differently just simply because of culture. It's a lot more laid back and a little bit less formal. I think one of the things that you notice is in the U.S., at least in all the churches I've been to, you pass an offering plate. Whereas in Australia, they're more private with that, and you pass an offering bag. So that way you can't see what you're putting in or taking out.
And you can't read that change.
No, I've seen people do that. I've also seen people, like, everyone down the road puts their hand in, opens it, and then takes it back out. They just don't want to be left out, even if they're not putting anything in. But it's just a little bit different. And so Australians aren't very confrontational, and they're not really about walking an aisle, being in public in front of everybody. When I give an invitation, rather than saying, come to the front, because everyone's just going to sit there and look at you, I'll generally say, I'll be available by the welcome table. If you have any questions, please stop by. If I can be a help to you in any way, stop by and see me. And that's generally how people who want to know Christ as their Savior will come to me privately, rather than in front of everyone.
I think that's a great idea, because all too often, people do not come forward. It doesn't matter what church it is. They're not coming forward because there is that conformity of peer pressure. Well, the majority of people are sitting and staying back, so I'm going to be with the majority because I don't want to stick out. I was having a conversation with Bill yesterday, and I said, hey, if a pastor got up in front of a church and said, how many of you are alcoholics? How many people will raise their hand? Hey, if you got up in front of the church body and said, hey, how many of you are into pornography or know somebody who's into pornography? How many people would raise their hands? It's the same thing with blended families in churches, that they feel ostracized and they feel unwelcome because they're not acknowledged as a family unit. They get lots of questions about how come you got divorced if they're divorced, or there's a focus on the loss of a spouse if they passed away. That there's very little acknowledgement that God's blessings for their family are indeed for them. There's very little talking coming from the pulpit that acknowledges them in the pews. And that's what we're passionate about here, is helping blended families and blended ministries understand that God is good all the time. And just because you put a four-letter word in front of family, S-T-E-P, it doesn't change God's blessings for you.
I think a lot of it, I know in our church, we have several step families or several blended families, and we tend to they're a family in the church. We try not to draw attention to that. We try not to major on that. Just like if I'm in the community or if I'm in the church, I don't major on the fact that I originally came from America. You deal with the commonalities and what, especially in that situation in church, of what we are in Christ. And really, to me, the background doesn't matter. If you're from a Christian home, blended family home, a blended Christian home, an unsaved home, the real emphasis should be on Christ. And mm-hmm. just trying to help people see that and say, you know what, we're all accepted in the body of Christ. So let's just live that out and work with each other and encourage one another and that type of thing.
Joe, with that in mind, is there a difference in Australia, do you think, with the way that marriage is perceived? Is it seen in more veneration, less veneration, the same? How is marriage perceived in Australia in the general culture?
I guess it would be different, like every country, different in the Christian subculture versus the secular subculture. By and large, in Australia, marriage is viewed as unnecessary. Like, you don't have to put a label on it and that type of thing. But within the Christian culture, you'd probably still have the same thing as in the U.S. It's very valued and cherished and looked at in that type of a way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I think what I see is, I guess it depends where you are in the U.S. Certainly, maybe up in the Northeast, where I know you spent some time, that people look down on marriage a lot more there than they would, say, in Tennessee or in the what we would call the Bible Belt. It's changing. But we still see ourselves as generally Christian. I was wondering if that is the case at all in Australia, where originally that wasn't the case.
Yeah, Australia would still probably call themselves a Christian nation.
Yeah.
And if you look in the history of a lot of our laws, that's where it's based, is the Ten Commandments, is because it comes from England and all that. But less and less so now. But they still claim a Christian heritage, even though probably a large percentage of the people would not call themselves Christian or go to church more than the big Christmas and, you know, maybe Easter. Although here it's more Christmas and Mother's Day than it is Easter.
Interesting. And what is the emphasis on Mother's Day? Why is that so important to?
I think it's because most people grew up with their mothers taking them to Sunday school and church. So it's kind of like the thing we do for mom on Mother's Day. And we played on it a few years back when we had a big ad for our Mother's Day service. And it had this old lady with a shocked look on her face on the phone. It says, "Shock your mom, come to church with her for Mother's Day." And just kind of had fun with it. And it just seems to be, for some reason, we have more people on Mother's Day than we do Easter.
That is interesting. Yeah. Do you see a difference with the way that people accept, receive, or react to the message of Christ there in Australia than you might see here in the United States right now?
I haven't been in the U.S. in probably 10 years. I can comment on it, what it was like when I grew up. Right. And I guess for me, having grown up in Boston, I see it very similar here. It's very skeptical, very, okay, yeah, sure, let me see it. And it's not like the first time you share the gospel with someone is usually not when they accept Christ as their savior. It's usually after spending 6 months answering questions. And to get to that 6 months, you've got to befriend someone and show them that what you say you believe and what you live lines up. And then what you have to say is worth them listening to.
Speaks to relationship, the importance of relationship, that the relationship needs to be there first. In our previous conversation, we were talking about the impact of the lockdowns, and now, of course, things are easing. But during that time, you had exponential growth. Can you share with us what you think created that growth and how you plan to sustain that growth?
What I think really created the growth is we kept a vision of, this is the phrase we said all throughout lockdown, we are still the church, still be the church. The church has never been a building. The church has always been the people. So whether we are physically together under one roof, virtually together, or locked into our houses, just be the church. That means just live out your faith. That means the people you come into contact with, still be a witness, still share the gospel, still be the church. And that's what we strive to do. And as a result of that, I really feel that God blessed us. And we weren't afraid to, God put people in our church. It's interesting. God put people in our church right before we needed them, who pulled me aside and said, hey, what are we going to do if we have to go online? And I said, oh, don't worry about it. We won't have to go online. No, no, no. What do we do if we have to go online?
Good. All right there.
Forgetting that this guy worked in IT in the government and he kind of knew what was coming because he'd seen what was in the rest of the world. And he sat down and taught me how to live stream from my laptop our services. And then all of a sudden, a few months later, it's like, ah, okay, that's why you're asking me that question. That's why God put you there. So just being willing to listen to people, I think that did that. And then most of our growth came from people during the lockdown who it rocked their world. And it made them think something big is going on here, something outside of ourselves. There's got to be someone really in charge of this, which caused them to go online and start looking. And then for some reason, it just seemed easier for them to start attending a church service that they felt like no one knew they were there.
Oh,
it was online, and it was just streamed where everyone could see me on YouTube, but I didn't see anyone. So always it was this number of people, devices are logged in, but you couldn't identify them. And as a result of that, and just listening for a while, we actually had two or three family ended up coming to know Christ as their savior and coming into our church. And one of them's been through discipleship and baptized, and they're now serving in the church and plugged in. So I think really it was just keeping that vision of what the church was. And communicating to the church, hey, this is how we can still be the church. During that time, we weren't able to meet, but you were able to do a walk around your neighborhood, like just to get out and exercise. And I would just tell people, you're out exercising. You can still letterbox. You can still say hi to your neighbor. You can still check on them to see if they need anything, you know, those types of things. People just kept doing it.
Yeah, I think there are similar experiences in blended families where when they come together, the situation has changed dramatically and they feel unsettled and uncertain. There's some role confusion. There's a lot of unspoken things that occur in the family by each person as they're getting to know each other. You are speaking our language when you talk about a vision. We are definitely visionary proponents. That's the thing that you can keep going back to say, wait, we decided that this is what we want to look like, that this is what's really important to us. And we're going to communicate that. We're going to articulate that with one another. We're going to have accountability and we're going to make a lot of mistakes as we go along the way. And that's okay because we've never done this before. Mm-hmm. And there is no family that is the same. While we have similarities, each family is unique. And I was writing this morning in my journal, I was thinking about the power of that in our uniqueness, God has called us to be stewards of the children that we're given. And when we blend, especially it seems more so for stepmoms than stepdads, that role confusion really throws them for a loop and they don't know what to do with that. And so if they were able to have this unity with their husband and develop a vision, they could keep going back to that. That's not going to change the hard, like live streaming for you. Probably the first time you didn't like it at all, I'm sure. And what is it? This is uncomfortable. It doesn't feel good. I don't get any feedback. A pastor who doesn't get feedback. You don't know if people are sleeping.
It was weird preaching to a screen. There's no one there.
Yeah.
You had a room full of people.
That's right. And it takes practice. And you had to get up week after week as you went through it. And so that's my encouragement to step family is that it's okay if you're struggling where you are right now. What's not okay is to stay in the stuck. So in order to get a different outcome, you got to do something different. And that's what I hear you saying about the growth in the church in Australia and in your church in particular, that you started doing some different things to create some change.
Yeah. And with that clear communication and accountability, we told our church throughout all of this that if we have clear communication and accountability, that's what will bring us unity and give us a unified vision and goal. But we have to be accountable to one another to make sure we're doing what we said we're going to do, even if we're not physically present. and we have to clearly communicate what it is that we're being accountable for. And I think it would be the same. I mean, I know it's the same in a family situation, and it would be the same in a blended family. The goal is always to have that unity. But when accountability breaks down and people function as single people, that's bad for any marriage. And when clear communication of what we need help with or what we're trying to do breaks down, all that makes for no unity.
What does that accountability look like?
You know, just within a marriage, like I know my wife and I, we've learned this, that the needs change as seasons change. Mm-hmm. And so we're going through that big time in our family because we have almost 15-year-old, an 18-year-old, and an almost 22-year-old, and then a 2-year-old. And yes, we've been through that 2-year-old stuff before. There are times that we've got to sit down, and usually on Mondays, we have our meeting and say, okay, this is what we have on this week. This is what we need to do. She'll say to me, is there anything you need me to do for you to help you? And I'll say to her, is there anything you need me to do to help you? And she'll, if you look at our diary, we have a shared one a week sometime. In the diary was, Melissa's going out for the day with her friend. Joe, watch baby. And I looked at that and go, okay, I'm watching the baby today. She's clearly communicated. But you've got to sit down. And as your kids grow, it changes from, you know, those toddler things to getting them to sport or getting them to work, and you've got to coordinate who's doing the ride. But if you don't sit down and have that conversation and know, as a husband, I know what my wife expects of me and needs of me this week. And as a wife, she knows what I expect of her, what I need of her this week. Then if you don't do that at the end of the week, you're going to have two very frustrated people who aren't getting the help they need, who aren't getting those expectations filled that they need, because they never actually clearly set a course and openly said, "This, I need this from you. I need this help from you. And this needs to change." And there's been times, like I said, as the kids grow, where you get into those ruts of, oh, this is how I help. And then all of a sudden you find out it's no longer helpful. Now this is helpful. Oh, okay. I didn't know that wasn't helpful anymore. I thought I was...
Boy, I love that, Joe. What a tremendous testimony that is. Jennifer and I stumbled into that a little bit. We were a little frustrated because we weren't feeling like we were exactly on the same page financially. So we said, oh, you know what? We should have a meeting about that at least once a week. And that meeting has morphed into the kind of meeting that you're talking about, into, hey, what are we going to have for dinner this week? What are we doing with the kid this week? Where are we going to go on date night? Things that you would think we just take these for granted, but what a great word. How many couples would really benefit from being able to sit down and pre-plan a week like that?
That is definitely our passion as far as establishing a vision for your family and for our listeners. I would encourage that sitting down, taking the time to do that without the kiddos, only the nursing babies are allowed. Yeah. And if you can get a break from the nursing baby, that would be good as well. But it's really important that you come together. And for some couples, that looks like going out on a walk. They need to change the space that they're in. And we've actually read evidence that supports that when you're making major decisions, it actually helps you to leave the space where you make normal decisions and go to a new space so that your brain engages in a different way. So we love the brain work. We love the vision stuff. We love the weekly get-togethers. I was going to test you. So what are we having for dinner on Wednesday?
Leftovers.
That's right. That's right. And tonight it's shepherd's pie. I've been sharing with my husband lately is decision fatigue, that we have all of these decisions that come at us throughout the day. So if there's some of those things that we can take out, they're already pre-decided, it certainly takes a lot of stress off everybody's plate because we are on the same team. And to demonstrate that we're on the same team, we have actual habits that we can point to and time spent together so that our marriage gets stronger. And it's getting stronger. I like you even a little bit more.
Oh, that's good. Joe, I want to go back a little bit and talk a little more about the difference in culture, because when you became a missionary, you probably had a picture of what being a missionary looked like versus what you've actually experienced. And I would love to hear, especially, how do the Australian people see you as a missionary?
I battled with actually that God could call me to Australia as a missionary, because for some reason in my mind, missionaries were in the jungle in a third world country. and you're giving up everything, you know, living in a mud hut, you know, the whole thing that you hear of. And then God just had to say, you know what? Your views are not always the way it's going to be. And the Lord just opened my mind up that Australia was needful. And then when we began to correspond and talk to, and we got to Australia, I found out that there's a thing in Australia, and they call it the tall poppy syndrome. And basically anyone who puts themselves up, they'll try to knock over and put you in your place. And so anytime as an American, you basically are coming in saying, God sent me to your country because you need me. In essence, that's how they take it. And right. So instantly, you've just put yourself here and put them there. And they're like, nah, we're going to knock you over and we're going to knock you down a peg. And so there's that initial thing there. And especially when we were up in Darwin, which is a very remote city, it's 36 hours from where we are now. It's closer to Jakarta, Indonesia than anywhere else in Australia. It's nowhere. Literally, you go through nothing and then it appears. And when we were there, every other, if you want to say, independent Baptist missionary who'd ever been there, never lasted more than 6 months. Mm. They quit. 6 months to a year, they were gone. And so I was, oh, when are you going? When are you leaving? When are you leaving? And so I would joke every 6 months, I would step up in the pulpit and I would look at the church and say, still here, let's open and pray. At the end of the year, I'd say, still here, let's open. And that's how every 6 months I would start the service and kind of get that going. And then I learned very quickly, Australian, very much, oh, we don't need missionaries here. And so generally when I introduce myself to anyone in Australia, I'm Pastor Joe from New Beginnings Baptist Church. But then I also found what was helpful to me, for some reason, when you go to preachers' meetings or fellowships or conferences, the American missionaries tend to all gather together and sit together around one table. And then you have all the Australian pastors over here. And I just determined right when we got here that if they would let me, I'll sit with the Australians, not the Americans. I was blessed in that several of the meetings I went to, there were two Australian men who were in their 70s or 80s and had been here and seen, done everything. I used to try to get the seat right between them and say nothing and just listen. I think that really changed their view of me, that I was willing to learn. And so when I have a question, I'll call an Australian pastor friend, not an American missionary friend, because the Australian grew up here. Like, they're going to know more. And it's the fact that you're willing to humble yourself and say, hey, mate, can you help me here? Or there's times where I said this in a message and I knew I disengaged the entire church. How did they take what I said? Do you really want to know? Yeah, that's calling. And then they would tell me and I was like, that's not what I meant. Oh, no.
I'm curious, is there a specific memory that comes to mind?
Oh, one time it was the first missions conference I ever preached in Australia, our sponsoring church. And I made the joke because I said, the only time in a Bible believing Christian's life, the only time it's good to be liberal is in your giving. And the minute I said that, not only did I get blank stares, but I got angry stares. I went, okay, I need to ask someone. After church, there was an Australian man that I had become friends with in the church. I said, Brother Terry, come here. And he said, what? And I'm like, I think I offended the whole church. I just don't know how. He goes, well, at what point in your message did you think that? And I told him what I just told you. And he goes, yeah, that's because you're not supposed to get political in the pulpit. Then you get political, I was talking about your giving. He says, no, you got very political. Matter of fact, you told us how to vote. And he said, and on top of that, Sister so-and-so who sits in the back. And I'm like, yeah, she was giving me the evil eye. She says, yeah, her son is a Labor senator. What I didn't know was there's two main political parties in Australia. The Liberal Party would be somewhat equivalent to our Republican Party. And the Labor Party is somewhat equivalent to our Democratic Party. So by saying it's only good to be liberal, I was in essence giving a political statement. And then I offended that one lady because her son was a Labor elected official. So I just got up the next night of the missions conference because I was scheduled to preach. First thing I said was, it's been brought to my attention that I had a dumb yank moment. For that, I sincerely apologize. I did not, and I just explained it to him, and I said, I'm sorry. I was just a dumb yank that didn't know any better. Would you please forgive me? The whole church just rolled in laughter and said, yes. It's okay, keep going. And what else are you going to do?
Yeah. I love that because it just shows that there are words. A word can be powerful, and yet we see it in a different way. And that can happen in blended families. That can happen anywhere where we just take a word. It's meant one way. It's taken another. What's interesting to me, you know, as you talk about relating to Australian pastors, I had one question. I was like, do you ever play the part? Do you ever have to come in and use the Australian accent because you don't want to be known as American?
You know what? Actually, let me just jump in here and say, in regard to accents, will you call us when you come back to the States, because I wonder what's going to happen to your accent, especially if you spent some time in Boston. Like, what does a Boston accent sound like?
Here's the funny thing is, in Australia, I'm still told I have an American accent. But when I talk to Americans, they tell me I speak Australian and use a lot of Australian words. Uh-huh. And so I've just come to the conclusion, because we're dual citizens of both countries, I've just come to the conclusion of wherever I'm a citizen of that country, I just have a bad accent.
There you go.
Oh, that's great. I imagine it's given you opportunities then to raise up the next generation or to disciple or mentor people that have now, it doesn't matter whether they're Australian, American, whatever, you're all Christian, and you've had opportunity that you might not have had to help other people follow Christ. Would you say that's the case?
Definitely. Invariably, when I'm out letterboxing and things, someone will hear my accent and they'll ask me, so what brought you to Australia? And I'll say, what brought me to Australia is, I'm here, and that's why I started New Beginnings Baptist Church, is to come out and to share what Christ has done for me and what he can do for you. And invariably, they look at me and go, oh, you went religious on me, and I actually asked for it, didn't I? Because people are like, it's like, but when you work it into a conversation like that, and they ask sometimes, so I've even had people tell me, like when we were up in Darwin, why would you leave America and come here? Mm-hmm. And I looked at him and said, you are.
What a beautiful answer.
Why I came here.
That's fantastic.
But you don't even know me. I'm like, yeah, no. And then that leads to more questions, and then you can share the gospel. So you can use that's it to beautiful. Your advantage sometimes.
So you've used a term that I don't recognize a couple of times now, letterboxing.
Oh, what sorry. Letterboxing you can do here, but it's a federal offense where you are.
Oh, great.
Yes.
Okay. Stuff in your mailbox.
Yes. Letterboxing is when you take a gospel track or a church invitation or any of those types of things, and you can put them directly into people's mailboxes in their letterbox. And it doesn't have to have a stamp on it. It doesn't have to go through the post office, anything like that. Whereas in America, you can't do that because it has to go through. But it would be the equivalent to door hangers.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. We got it. Okay. There are lots of intertwined words and accents.
Yeah. I like their law better.
Yeah.
Term letterboxing. Yeah. Hey, so when people come in and they've met you in the back of the church because they want to learn more about who Jesus is, and then they commit, you mentioned to us that there's a 14-week discipleship program. What areas of resistance do you find that people have in that discipleship program?
A few, and a lot of it depends on their family background. It really does. Because whether we equate it or not, every family has its own culture, like every country has its own culture. Mm-hmm. And so whenever you have a marriage of any type, but even more step family marriages, because in a step family, you've got usually at least one spouse who has come from a family background, married, and there's another merger of culture, which creates a third subculture, then that is there. And then you bring three cultures together, and now you're trying to make three into one. So it's a lot of that is in discipleship as well. It depends. We've had folks see our church is very unusual. We probably have 60-70% of our church that English is their second language. We have people from every continent in our church except Antarctica. And I said that jokingly in church one day, and about five people said, "We'll find someone who's been to Antarctica." I said to him, "There's a goal for you." But anyways, and so it's just different. Sometimes it's money. Money's always a big one. It's simply being in church. I came on Sunday morning. What do you want? What else more do you want? So I was like, yeah, but Sunday night's different. And Wednesday night's different. And growth groups are different. Or it's also, you want me to give to the church, and now there's these missionaries you want me to give money for too? Isn't that enough? Or it can be family things. They do something a certain way as a family. Even in that financial thing, we always try to encourage in our premarital counseling and all that type of stuff that when you get married, the Bible says the two become one. Mm-hmm. And I honestly try to encourage them, even your finances, to unify that into that one account that all the bills get paid from. So that way you're not tempted to have two separate accounts and still live two single lives under one roof. That also gives accountability, because then each knows who's spending what and all that type of stuff. So that's probably usually a big, like, why do I have to answer to him for what I do? Why do I have to answer to her? I make my money. Yeah, but if you do it together, you have a little bit more unity.
Joe, you know, I really can relate to that idea that people, when they come together, they don't understand the importance of marriage, even as you're talking about. And yet, I know in the United States, our country incents people not to get married. Is that the case in Australia?
Sometimes, yes, because especially with different financial benefits, you can get more if you're single than if you're married. Sometimes if you're married, you might not be able to qualify for a carer's benefit. If you weren't married, but you were living under the same roof to take care of the person, you would qualify for the carer's benefit. But they don't pay it to a spouse. And so therefore, I've actually heard of people actually getting divorced because the person couldn't care for their spouse and work to make an income. But if they weren't married, then the government would give this person a carer's benefit to actually stay home and care for the person. So you're sitting there scratching your head going, so you divorced so that way you'd have an income, so that way you could then take care of this person. But you're still living in the same house. Yeah, but I get the income now.
Yeah, that's the mission part is tricky business, especially when the government pokes their nose in it and is very much against marital success. I think there are numerous ways that we could point out in countries around the world. It's because they're opposed to the message of Jesus. We are definitely here to offer hope and prevent re-divorce for stepfamily couples. We encourage pastors to acknowledge from time to time in the pulpit that you have blended families in your church and speak to some of the issues that are relevant to them. Boy, it must be difficult when your kids transition every other week or whatever the norms are for a custody schedule. Or we understand that some of you, your children aren't participating in youth ministry because they're participating in the other church. However, this one event that we're having, we'd really love for them to come. It's okay that they're not part of the youth group. We'd love for them to come so we can love on your kids. That speaks volumes from the pulpit when you acknowledge that you're aware these are some of the challenges that families have. Instead of generalizing them all, acknowledging that and really giving them the resources to prevent re-divorce.
Yes. And I think too, like I know in our church, there's situations where I've actually said to people, hey, you know what? That must be difficult because they were coming to me talking about behavioral issues they were having with their child. Mm-hmm. And I said to them, but if you think about it from the child's point of view, they've got these expectations and rules in your home. But then when they're in the other parent's home, it's a different thing. And your home is Christian and their home is not. Mm-hmm. So what you think is important is diametrically opposed. And so maybe we can show a little bit of grace to that young person and help them through understanding of, hey, yes, you know, different place here. We do it this way. This is, and I try to tell people whether even not blended families, if you try to help children understand why it is you do what you do, or why do you have that rule in place, it's mm-hmm. really helpful. And I think it's even more helpful for a young person who has to go from one home to another home to understand why this home has this rule that this home thinks is dumb, or vice versa. And I think it's more important to try to teach the why rather than just expect the obedience unquestioning. Because that's one thing I've noticed in the younger generation, especially in church, they're question everything. And just because that's the way it's always done doesn't mean that's right.
Yeah, it's difficult to embrace that change can be a good thing unless we're the ones who are initiating the change. When we blend, the adults do initiate that change and the kid, they don't have a say in it. So as you were talking about your place at the table between the experienced pastors sitting in between them and just listening, that's my note of encouragement. And the vision that I had as you were talking, that's the parent sitting in between the kids, actually listening and asking questions about what their experience is before you get to the why. This is why we do this in our house, but really inviting them in to have that conversation. And of course, it depends on the ages of the kids, but we definitely recommend a round table, a weekly transition day discussion to say, hey, it's transition day, which means emotions are higher. There's frustrations they may be bringing from the other home. Make it a lighter day. And is there anything we need to know that you need this week? And share some things that are happening with you. Hey, I've got this special event, or I'm traveling on these days, that kind of thing, so that you actually invite them in where they feel like a valued member of making the family run successfully, which of course is our passion of creating a vision and a mission for your family. And we are all about turning the impossible into step family mission possible. You shared with us about new beginnings, and I love the sound of that. So definitely new beginnings through grow groups or growth groups, talking about as far as discipleship and fellowship. You want to share a little bit more about those?
We call our Sunday school classes growth groups because in Australia, Sunday school's for children. So the minute you call it Sunday school, adults and teens go, oh, I don't need to come. It's not for me. That's for the kids. So we've called them growth groups. And it was just a teaching time. And so I said, nah, I want to use this group to build connections. And for people to be able to encourage one another and all that type of thing. So what I've done is I want to connect our church to our missionaries. And so we start out the growth groups now, and someone reads a 5-minute excerpt from a prayer letter of one of our missionaries. We write down prayer requests into a prayer bulletin. I put in that prayer bulletin, this is our missionary's email address. And I jokingly told our church, I said, hey, email the missionaries, just let them know you're praying for them. But please, when you do it, don't ask them 1,000 questions. Because if everyone in every supporting church is asking them 1,000 questions, they'll never actually have any time to do what we're supporting them. I said, so just a note of saying, hey, we're praying for you this week. We've read your prayer letter. Maybe mention a prayer request that you're praying for, something like that. And then we take prayer requests from those actually in the growth group. And then after that, I said, well, I spent about 5 or 6 minutes in prayer. Why don't you pair off with different people in the church and try not to. I said, I know you come with your family and you're sitting with your families and all that, but how about we pray with someone different? Or, hey, if you're in the back, why don't you come to the front and pray with someone? And I purposely get people to mix around. So then that way they have to interact with other people and make those connections. And then, as you said to them, that just means the lesson that I may teach in 40 minutes, now I have to teach over 2 separate classes, but I'd rather build the connection. You can call on that. You have those things. I said, or there may be a connection you make and someone you may find out is going through something or has gone through something you've gone through or are going through, and they may be able to speak into that. And it would be the same thing. All of a sudden you're praying with someone, you find out, oh, wait a minute, like that's a blend. I didn't know you were a blended family. And now all of a sudden you have a connection that you can encourage each other in, or even fill in the blank with 1,000 other things. So that's what we're trying to do with those growth groups. And with our church new beginnings, we try to emphasize that, you know, as Lamentation says, God's mercies are new every morning. And I always tell people, whether you are a Christian, a non-Christian, you're going to need new beginnings multiple times in your life. And we just want to be the place where you can come and have a new beginning. And we're not going to be, I do not want our church to be that, well, if you hadn't done that, if you had done this, you wouldn't have made that bad choice. I'm glad you're an expert and you've never made a bad choice in your life, but we all have. And the church should be the place where you can come and say, yeah, I need a new beginning. I messed that one up. And then we should be there to say, hey, adjustment falls 7 times, rise up again. Let me give you a hand. and I'll be there for you, and I'll help you in any way I can. Recently, we had someone come to me and say, oh, I'd like to resign a church membership. We want to go see what else is out there, this and that. And I looked at him and I said, you know what? I said, I don't like your decision. I said, but I'll support you and I love you and I'm here for you no matter what. I said, just please do me a favor. I'd like this decision more if you said, I'm not going to be attending this church, but I'm going to this church because we've moved to this area. I said, because that tells me there's there. I said, what I'm afraid of for you is that this means that you won't end up in any church. And please don't let that happen. And I told him, I said, it's a family that we're close to. And I said, whether you like it or not, you're stuck with me, whether I'm your pastor or your friend, whatever you want to refer to me. And just know that even if you're not here, you have my number. You call anytime. I am there for you. No questions asked. And I'll help you in any way I can. And they literally began to cry and said, wow, that's not what we were expecting. I said, but we love you and we want what's best for you. Now, I think what's best for you is here, but I can't make that decision for you, but I can be there for you. And I think we need that more, not just coming from the pastor, but coming from the church.
Yeah.
Rather than being, I believe you would do that. Okay. Like, you've never done something stupid in your life and made a decision.
We're not going to talk about those right now. Let's move on.
I didn't want to talk about those. I'm just saying in general.
Yeah, Matthew West has a song, Truth Be Told, and it just resonates that line that says, didn't you say that church should be more like a hospital?
It should be a place where you can come and get help to start over again and keep going. Now, obviously, it'd be much better if we lived for God the entire time and never had to start over again.
Hey, it's clear that you are passionate about loving on people and you take your role as a missionary. I'm not even sure the adjective I want to use to describe, but clearly it's important to you. And we certainly appreciate you sharing some of your experiences and what life is like living as a dual citizen. I guess really you're a triple citizen because you're a citizen of heaven too. So first and foremost, but in line with missionary work, if you could invite people in to do one thing, what would that one thing be?
I would encourage you, get involved in missions. Missions is not just in another country, in another planet, in another side of the globe or whatever. Missions is local. It's getting out and sharing the gospel with people. I just do in Australia what thousands of other people do in churches all over America. And that's just sharing the gospel with people. And then also just take a missions trip. Go somewhere else and just see how something's done somewhere else. And another culture, another thing. And the U.S. is unique in that you can go to another part of the U.S. and go to a completely different culture. I moved from Boston, went to Bible college in Tennessee, and I used to go around going, why is everyone so nice? What do they want from me? And it took me a while to realize they didn't want anything. They were just nice. Where I'm from, if someone's really nice to you and you don't know them, they want something from you. But then when you come back from a mission trip in another culture, especially if you go to a third world country, you'll come back more appreciative for what you have and be more thankful for what you have than ever before. When my oldest daughter went on a mission trip to PNG, she came back so thankful for just the simple little things like, she could take a hot running shower and didn't have to worry about the hot water running out. She could turn the tap on and put the cup under there and drink till her heart's content and wasn't going to be sick. Just little things like that. So just get involved, go on a mission trip somewhere. You'll be more appreciative and you'll see things from fresh eyes. And the Bible's true when it says, mine eye affecteth my heart. And it will change how your involvement in a lot of areas in life.
That's a good word. And if people happen to be, I don't know, flying from the U.S. to Australia, or they're in Australia listening, where can they find you locally if they want to stop by and visit New Beginnings?
Yeah, if you want to stop by, we'd love to have you. We have plenty of room. We have a new building that can seat 1,500, even though we only have about 70 or 80, but we've got more chairs. We're in the north side of Brisbane. We are in an area called North Lakes Mango Hill. And we meet at the Mango Hill State School, New Beginnings Baptist Church. We'd love to have you.
Oh, that's wonderful.
That's great.
Australia was on the bucket list. I don't know about now. We'll have to see how things work out. But definitely, it's always been an interesting place for me to think about going. So thank you so much for joining us today on Step Family Mission Possible. You've really blessed our day. And I pray that people have received information that helps them move forward in their walk with the Lord. So thanks so much, Joe.
Thank you, Joe.
Oh, thanks for having us. If it could help just one person, it'd be a blessing.
Hey, thanks for tuning in. Would you help us grow? We'd be grateful for a 5-star review for Step Family Mission Possible. Thanks, y'all. Take care.